realfaith.org.au.
One of the women said, "Gladys, I don't want you to be like a stone, but I want you to be strong for Esther." So then Esther was actually sitting in the lounge at the time. And I said to her, "It seems like we've been left alone." But I said, "We will forgive." And she said, "Yes, Mummy, we will." Wow. And so finally was told at 9:30 that they had died. "I need you to be strong for Esther, but don't be like a stone." Mm. I understood what that meant.
Welcome to Real Faith. Conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through. Helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's real people, real life and real faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Well, today we have a special edition of Real Faith as once again we're focusing on the movie that was made about Australian missionary Graham Staines called The Least of These, The Graham Staines Story. Graham was tragically killed along with his two sons in 1999 while serving in India. Today, his wife Gladys will be sharing about the making of that movie and also about her life since that tragedy. Gladys is chatting with Rod Hopping from Heritage Films.
Gladys, was it unusual for you when somebody first approached you to say, "We'd like to tell the story about your family on film"?
Well, yeah, it was. A few people over the years, even before I came home from India, you know, said that they wanted to make a film, and I just, you know, sort of shrunk back a bit because I got tired of interviews, tired of media, tired of everything. So when Andrew Matthews approached me, I thought about it, and then because he came personally and sort of talked through it all with his wife, and it was lovely. In principle, agreed to do it, yeah.
So that was some years ago.
That was 2005, I think, because I had already moved to Townsville.
I imagine a big part of the journey is finding people you could trust or felt that you could trust, even though, I guess, relative strangers are approaching you.
Well, I didn't actually have too much input into, or I didn't have to go searching people. Certainly, just through getting to know Andrew, I felt like I could trust him. Mm-hmm. I just had that sense, and I guess it was a bit of a stab in the dark in a sense. But part of the initial agreement was that they would consult with me, and he sent me drafts of the scripts, and I said, "Well, no, this is not right," or the part that related to our family or the work that we had been doing, I had a lot of input into that. So as they did that, and then when it came to the actual final agreement, that took a little longer because I actually needed to work through legal channels to get that correct as far as myself and my family were concerned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and for them also, of course. Yeah. But yeah.
Do you like movies yourself? Are you a movie person?
I'm not a great movie person. Yeah. I was brought up that going to the cinema is sin. Yeah. Almost, not quite. But
we forgive you if you have been.
We didn't have a TV. We just didn't have one. I don't think it was any religious reasons. We just didn't have one. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've watched movies over the years, but I prefer, I said certainly PG movies, but like real life stories and, yeah. Mm. I mean, I did go and watch Happy Feet and, you know.
Right. That's good, isn't
and
it?
And those sort of things.
Yeah, yeah, you can't help but smile, can you?
Yeah.
And tell me, you've now watched and seen The Least of These.
I have seen it on the TV screen, yes. Yeah. So, and I've seen several drafts of it before that. So, okay.
How do you feel the filmmakers went in telling your story on the screen?
Well, as good as they could in the short time frame, in the sense that, you know, you can't tell. It's not the whole story.
Yeah.
It's only very much a part of what story that related to a very short period of time and really... You know, it's certainly not, it's not purported to be a documentary.
Yeah.
And, so I think they did well in what they've done, yeah.
So you feel like they've captured some of your life? You feel like they've been able to show the Staines family in India?
The small parts of it, yeah,
right.
Yeah. I mean, what's been done has been, it's done quite well. And, you know, when I watched the... scenes with the children running around being children, you know, the two boys and, you know, running and jumping on daddy's bed and, you know, That was nice, and just watching them. I mean, of course, it brings back memories of the boys. My boys aren't there anymore, or aren't with me anymore. Of course, they wouldn't have been boys anymore. They would have been
young men.
They would have been 30 and 27 or something. Yeah, 31 and 27. Yeah.
And did they? The movie has them playing cricket. Did they used to like playing cricket?
Graham taught them to play cricket. Yes. Yeah. And we actually played cricket. Well, I mean, the compound, all the boys around played cricket, so they played cricket. Yeah. But when we used to go to another 80Ks away, we'd go to another mission compound for like every month for 4 days, and that was sort of like a bit of R&R, but also we had a leprosy clinic over there, a church service, and that was a time Graham could spend uninterrupted time with the family.
Yeah.
And so we always played cricket as a family, so was, you know, lovely memories. To put the cricket part in was really lovely.
Yeah, yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
So those were downtime moments? Do you recall
They were downtime moments, definitely. I mean, even when the children played cricket of an afternoon, that's, you know, nothing much gets done at that time of the day. Mm. Well, it can be done, but, you know, it's a time when people just sort of tend to relax a bit more toward the evening. So,
So that was 4 days every month?
About 4 days every month. Yeah. We'd go over Saturday afternoon, come back Tuesday afternoon. So
the rest of the time, it was pretty full on, pretty busy for you guys?
Pretty well. I mean, Saturday wasn't so busy, but, I mean, there was a leprosy clinic at the hospital, not the hospital, at the gate of the mission house, and then Graham would go out to the leprosy home. But Saturday, it sort of was... There was more time, but Sunday with church. But Graham always spent whatever time he could with the family also on Sunday.
Yeah.
And we let the staff have most of the day, you know, the day off actually. And so we did sort of looked after ourselves. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you feel that the film adequately also covered the work that you were doing in the leprosy community and in terms of the connection, the hands-on, the regular cleaning of wounds and helping people out? Do you think it captured that side of things?
I didn't actually go out to the leprosy home all that much myself because I was my visa didn't permit me to do too much of that. But I certainly was, you know, did go out a little bit and was more of a supervisory role. But, you know, if I needed to, I could do it. I did it.
Yeah.
Graham certainly would have done it much more than me because he went out he was out there 3 days. But there was also the ex-leprosy patients who... were quite willing to, they were taught how to do dressings and actually would go away to the leprosy mission training thing to teach them how to do dressings.
Yeah.
And they had no problem in touching someone else who had leprosy because they had been leprosy patients themselves.
Right.
So that made it that we, because otherwise a lot of people didn't want to come and help do that sort of thing because of the stigma associated with it. But certainly, you know, we were involved in probably a lesser role. It wasn't an everyday less a role in the actual on hands of the care of the wounds, but I mean, there's a lot of other things, and we, you know, medications and a lot of other things. Yeah.
Now you have a medical background.
I'm a registered nurse.
Tell me, give me a snapshot of life today. You live in Townsville in North Queensland.
Yeah, I live in Townsville. I moved to Townsville when we came, when my daughter had finished. Esther had finished school in Uttakamand in a boarding school, Hebron School in South India.
Mm-hmm.
And so she'd completed all her, as much schooling as she did. She did the A-levels, the British A-levels, so that was year 13.
Yeah.
She wanted to study university in Australia.
Yeah.
And she felt like she needed to connect with her roots. She was born and brought up in India, so it wasn't that she was coming back to Australia.
Yeah.
She was coming to a country of her passport.
Yeah.
I was coming back to Australia. She had visited but never actually lived for more than two or three, you know, like 9 months maximum sort of thing. She wanted to do university here. I felt I wanted and needed to spend time with her, learning to adjust to a country she didn't know. And unlike international students who usually have some difference, like an accent or a different colour skin or whatever, she would find it hard to be accepted as not being understood because she didn't understand.
Yeah.
And so I chose to come home and spend the years of her university with her because I knew that, you know, the natural process of things is children get married and then that's, you know, you don't have that same connection.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm really glad I did that, yeah.
So when was that you first came back to Australia?
I came back to Australia in 2004.
Yeah.
And then I got my nursing registration back. I had to do 4 units of university to do that, and that was hard because our training was apprentice-based, like in the hospitals.
Yeah.
And then Yeah, so for the last 10 years, more than 10 years, I've been working as a registered nurse in a hospital and doctor surgery, and I really enjoy that. So.
And a grandma?
Yes, my daughter got married 9 years ago today.
Hey, that's exciting.
Yeah. And God has blessed them and us, me, with four children, and, you know, go to church with them together. And
Nice.
Yeah.
So life is busy?
Life is busy, but good,
So you chose to stay in India for another 5 years after you lost Graham and Philip and Timothy. That's a decision. I'm not sure I could have done it. But you felt compelled to stay?
I felt compelled to stay, but more to the point, I didn't want to leave.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You know, because I knew that it had become home. Graham and I had been married for 15 and a half years. Mm-hmm. I had, by this stage, lived in India for over 15 years because I met Graham in India. Mm-hmm. That's another whole story, which we won't go talk today. Yeah, God brought us together in India. Yeah. So, you know, we only lived like across the mountain in Australia. So he came from Bedeset, I came from Ipswich.
Of course, yeah.
And so I decided, you know, I wanted to come home and see Mum and Dad, but I didn't want to leave the leprosy patients. I didn't want to bring Esther at the age of 13 to Australia, a country she didn't know, to an education system she didn't know. And 13-year-olds can be pretty...
It's tough age.
Tough age, yeah. Mm. She had a big support group. And she had stated to me before, even in those holidays, she said, Mum, I hope I'll be able to complete my whole schooling at Hebron School, because she'd seen some of her friends go back to their countries before they completed their schooling.
Yeah.
And she just wanted to complete it, and I certainly stood by her in that. So when people said, oh, you should come back to Australia, she can get as good an education, she can learn this, she can do that, I said, no, she needs to stay where she is.
Today we're listening to a conversation between Rod Hopping from Heritage Films and Gladys Staines. Gladys is the widow of Australian missionary Graham Staines, who was tragically killed in 1999 while serving in India. We'll have more of this conversation when we return right here on Real Faith.
The Word for Today is Australia's most widely read daily devotional, designed to give you practical teaching to keep you focused on your relationship with Jesus. Read it online or subscribe to the free printed edition at thewordfortoday.com.au.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scadabo, and today we're listening to a conversation between Rod Hopping from Heritage Films and Gladys Staines, who is the widow of Australian missionary Graham Staines, who was tragically killed in 1999 while serving in India. A movie about Graham's life has been made called The Least of These, The Graham Staines Story. Next, we'll hear more about the making of the film and about Gladys's life since the tragedy.
In the movie, we watch that scene where the character playing Gladys is waiting for some news, and she finally finds out that she's lost her husband and sons, which is such a tragic moment.
Mm.
What we see in the movie is fairly soon after that, the character playing you says, I choose to forgive. Mm. Is that close to what happened?
It is. Close to what happened.
Yeah.
It was from the time I was first told the Jeeps had been burned at 4:30 in the morning. I couldn't get adequate news as to what really happened, because everyone was not wanting to tell me, because normally it is the role of a close family member to tell a grieving person, a person who will be grieving, that, you know, their family have been killed.
That's just cultural.
That's cultural, yes. And so the district administrator, who we knew well and very supportive, had sent Dr. Das and his family, who were members of the Rotary Club. Graham was a Rotarian. Mm-hmm. I was also involved in the women's section of the Rotary Club, so a very good support group in the community, and they knew us. And so they were sent to tell us, and they came and they were shaking like crazy. Mm. they wouldn't tell. Finally, one of the women said, "Gladys, I don't want you to be like a stone, but I want you to be strong for Esther." So then Esther was actually sitting in the lounge at the time. And I said to her, "It seems like we've been left alone." But I said, "We will forgive." And she said, "Yes, Mummy, we will." Wow. And so that happened. I mean, I finally was told at 9:30 that they had died. You know, like, "I need you to be strong for Esther, but don't be like a stone." Mm. I understood what that meant. So, so it was actually about 5 hours from the time I knew the Jeeps had burned. And so in that time, God, for 1 hour, I amazingly went back to bed and slept, but that was God. And I guess I didn't want to believe that, you know, anything could have happened to them. That was just the Jeeps had burned, other things had happened other times. So, and I didn't go out and proclaim so much that at that time that I wasn't in front of people when I said that. But then the media, the newspaper, the journalists came and said, "Well, are you angry?" And I said, "Well, I'm not angry, but I'm sad, but I've forgiven." And then they asked, "Well, how could you forgive?" And I said, "Well, Jesus taught us to forgive. And when Jesus hung on the cross, he said, 'Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do.' Well, though I'm not Jesus, but he has forgiven me from my sins and he has taught us to forgive." And I had also known from a little magazine paper I had read a number of years before about the church in China growing despite persecution. Mm-hmm. And one of the statements on a prayer thing that we were getting was, "Why has the church grown?" And the statement said, "Because the Christians have forgiven." And that made a very big impact on me. That, like, had been probably 15 years before that.
Wow.
Yeah. So when persecution was starting to happen in India, I remember about 10 days before Graham died and my family were killed, there was persecution happening closer in the state where we lived. Not real close, but 500 k's, still the same state.
Absolutely.
And I made this statement to our staff members. I said, "But the Christians need to forgive." And that impact, that statement, you know, you say things sometimes and it hits you like a brick. And I went inside and I said to Graham, I said, "Oh, you know, with everything that's happening, Christians need to forgive," having absolutely no idea that this might happen to our family, I guess. Because there'd been a lot over in Western India in the state of Gujarat, and I guess I thought we were a bit immune to it or something. Yeah. But, So certainly, I could see things leading up to the way I forgave. But it was God who gave me that strength. And, you know, and in the Bible it says that if you confess with your mouth, and I realised that confessing that I, you know, openly that I had forgiven, it also, you know, really started a healing process. Not that you forget or that I was totally healed from grief or anything like that, but it just meant that it wasn't that bitterness. And the Bible, we're also told in Romans 12:19 that vengeance is mine, says the Lord, I will repay. And, you know, so not to take revenge, basically. Yeah, do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath. And I thought, okay, Lord, I remembered that verse and I said, Lord, it's in your hands. Which meant that I didn't have to worry about, look at everything, what the judgments were, what this was, what that was.
I find that your story quite profound, as I think most people do. And I think usually the profound stories are the ones that do end up on film, because there's a profound nature to it. And I think at the core of that is your decision to forgive. You've just explained that it wasn't instant, it took maybe 5 hours.
Well, it's because I didn't know the details.
No, yeah.
But I mean, yes, it did give me that.
But for some of us, over trivial things, it can take years and therapy and practicing to forgive and false starts and things like that. I'm just amazed, and I think, you know, I think we all are, that your foundation from the very early part was to forgive. Is forgiveness for you in particular around losing your family, do you have to revisit that? Do you find that it's something you've got to continue to do? I'm just fascinated to know.
You mean forgive those who killed the family or just general forgiveness?
Well, I guess they are two different things, but they're interconnected. But I imagine disappointment too, maybe disappointment in God perhaps. Is that something that you have to come to terms with as well?
I can't say that I've ever actually felt disappointed in God. I used to say to people I wasn't angry, but a couple of years ago I was finding life not easy. You know, at one time I said, "Well, why did the family have to die?" You know, like that. I didn't say it to anyone in particular, but, you know, because I miss them so much. Yeah. You know, my daughter's married now and that's great and I live not far from her.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have it any other way, but, you know. And, so it's not so much revisiting the forgiveness I gave at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It's working through the fact that I don't have my family there. Mm. With me, I mean. And when, you know, the grandchildren are born, the Reuben's family are there. The kids' uncles aren't, but they do talk about them. But, you know, it's sometimes harder to forgive in the little things than the big things. Mm. And so it's a constant. I believe forgiveness is something we have to constantly work on.
Yeah.
It may be a different situation, or it may even be something that happened and we thought we'd forgiven and then go back. So, it's a process, and I wouldn't say that, I'm super person or anything because I forgave back there, but God enabled me to forgive.
Mm.
But it doesn't take away the sadness and the grief that's there. And it's not a matter of moving on, it's moving forward.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of saying time heals. Time of itself can't heal, but God works through situations to bring joy out of sorrow too. So,
We do get a glimpse in the movie of a broken moment, devastation. And I guess there is that scripture of, you know, he has a bottle to collect our tears.
Mm.
And I've always thought, what a beautiful, intimate picture to collect someone's tears.
Mm. Yes.
And to do that, you have to be present. If I was going to catch your tears, I'd have to be with you while you're crying.
That's right.
Yeah. So there is this picture of God with us in our brokenness.
Mm-hmm.
Has it been your sense from the moment you lost your family I'm sure you probably still cry.
I do at times. Yeah.
Do you feel the closeness of God in those moments? Is there something that has gone on where you has felt his presence in that brokenness?
I guess I have. I haven't really labelled it as such, but yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, but I mean, people have said to me, well, why didn't you, how come you didn't turn away from God? And I can't understand that question because why would you turn away? Where else do you turn to? I guess the fact I know that I'm going to meet them again and they had their, you know, personal relationship with Christ and, I knew them again, but, but where else do you go without Christ?
Absolutely. Mm. We saw them singing When the Rollers Caught Up Yonder.
Mm.
Was there any truth in that song as part of your family?
Yes.
Yeah.
My son Philip loved that song.
Really?
Yeah. And on the graves we actually have, it's a joint grave, and so we've got Graham in the middle with the Bible open.
Seen a picture of it, yeah.
And on the right hand side is Philip with, he's an angel with a trumpet, and that's significant of the Rollers Called Up Yonder.
Mm-hmm.
As you look at them, and then on the left-hand side, there's an angel with a rose because Timothy loved roses, and he used to hold a rose and sing this little song he'd make up, and so when we all get to heaven, we'll all be given a rose. So,
a beautiful way to mark that.
So the role is called Up Yonder is significant.
The overriding story, which was a device that was created to tell your story of the journalist, who was trying to, I guess, get the scoop and prove that you guys were all about converting people, which was illegal.
Mm. It was illegal with inducement.
Inducement.
It's not illegal to convert unless they made an anti-conversion law, but it was, the Constitution said you could preach, practice and propagate, but it's illegal with
bribes
the inducement.
And money
or,
and things like that. So I think I cry every time I see this on the film, and it's towards the end, and I guess it's talking about the life that particularly Graham, but when I hear Graham, I hear you as well because you're there together. But ironically, that they couldn't, that in the story, find proof of this inducement because you guys were busy loving people and caring for people and caring for their practical day-to-day needs. And I think personally that just screams of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Mm.
The big message is it was hope for the hopeless.
Yes.
And it seemed to me that that was portrayed powerfully in the film.
Yeah.
That the legacy, if you like, for your family, for Graham and Philip and Timothy and yourself and Esther, is that there are a lot of people that received hope. And I'm guessing that that came every day as they were cared for and looked after by people who hadn't cast them aside when their families had.
Yeah.
And I believe that there's a death ceremony that takes place.
Yes, I don't know if it still does, but certainly in the past it has, yeah.
And so someone with leprosy, in a sense, is considered dead by their own families. Mm.
The government has certainly worked hard to educate, eradicate the stigma of leprosy and prevent those things. But sometimes it's, I don't know if the death ceremony happens, but still, possibly in some places, I don't know. Mm. But it's not just the legacy, it's not just the hope that the leprosy patients find in being cared for, but the biggest legacy for Graham is the fact that through, he taught about Christ, he shared about Christ. Through their deaths, in a sense, I have heard of many, many, many people who've said, well, if that their God is real, I want to be Christian.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, how many people will see in heaven because of, directly related to those events, we will never know. And I just praise God for that.
When you think about that, that's word of mouth or relational people talking.
Yeah.
What do you think is possible, or what do you hope maybe is possible? Now, there's a movie that portrays that, I think, very, very well. And as we know with a movie, anybody can see it. It can go anywhere in the world. You're working on multiple languages. Mm-hmm. Would you find a hope within you as far as this, a similar outcome of what you're already hearing, that I see the glint in your eye when you talk about people coming to faith?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a similar thing you would probably hope for with this film?
Certainly that it will point people to the real truth.
Absolutely.
Who's found in Christ.
Gladys, thank you so much for joining with me today and for your time.
Thank you.
Lovely.
Rod. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Rod Hopping from Heritage Films and Gladys Staines chatting about the movie that was made about her husband's life called The Least of These, The Graham Staines Story. To find out more about the movie, you can go to the website, theleastofthesemovie.com.au. That's theleastofthesemovie.com.au. Finally, we want to say a special thanks to the Australian Christian Channel for providing the audio for today's conversation.
You've been listening to Real Faith, and if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join us again next time for more conversations about God working in the lives of people who put their faith and trust in Him. That's real people, real life, and real faith.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.